Thanks, Gary, for that wonderful introduction. My name is Rick Santos, and I'm an alcoholic, and it's really good to be here. I it's a privilege and an honor to be able to be asked to talk in any kind of a capacity in AA. It's especially an honor to be able to talk with all the Zoom bombers. Sooner or later, they realize we don't even give a shit if they Zoom bomb us, whatever. So it really doesn't matter. So go ahead, bomb away. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was, as a younger person, and I didn't really appreciate what was going on here. I thought it was just some kind of a flimsy read of nothingness. I didn't think you guys had anything that I wanted. I thought you guys were all a bunch of lames. And, for the most part, that's kind of true. And for the most part, actually, we are just kind of a bunch of lames. And that's good though today for me. I had a normal upbringing, I guess. Neither one of my parents drank. They both went to work every day and did what you're supposed to do. And it was okay. It was a good childhood. I don't have any complaints about that or anything like that. I got to fix this because it's driving me crazy. It's gonna fall or something. It's gonna do something anyway. I never felt like I fit in. I was never could be a part of life. I would go and I would I would go to school and so first of all, let me just back up and start over. So I was born into this family that was sent me to Catholic school, but they weren't religious. I was the only child and there was no other kids in my neighborhood. So I pretty much just didn't know how to fit in, didn't know how to interact with other kids, et cetera, et cetera. And I went to this school and like most people do, and I realized that today that I was not unique at that time, but I really felt like I was unique. And I went to the school. I didn't know how to interact with other kids. I didn't know how to do anything at all. And I ended up getting bullied. I ended up getting, didn't have a lot of friends, kind of stuck to myself, that kind of thing. And, for the most part, just live my life. You know what I mean? But I never fit in with anybody. And when I found a group of kids that I wanted to be like these kids were not, nobody was messing with these kids. They weren't really going to class and that kind of thing. They were kind of hanging out in the smoking area. And I wanted to be like those kids. And when I got to, I hung out with them for a minute and, they were passing this bottle around one day and I got that stuff to stay down because I wanted to fit in with those kids and my life changed. And I didn't know it at the time that my life had changed, but my life definitely had changed. I love the effects that I got from alcohol. I absolutely love the effects that I got from alcohol. And I stopped going to class all the time. We'd go to class to take roll, then we'd sneak out or do whatever, manipulate our way into doing something else. And I love to party. And the other thing I love is I love music. I, even to this day, that's one of the things that gets me out of myself. I love music and I love that whole thing. And, so those two kind of things kind of went together hand in hand. I started playing in this band and I played drums and now we were the party. We were bringing the party to you. And it was just a lot of drama and a lot of fun at the same time. And all this time, little by little, my parents my parents are like, can you just not drink, or slow your drinking down or whatever. And there'd be different kinds of opportunities that would arise. Sometimes it would be like a funeral or whatever. And my mom would say, just don't drink today. Just do not drink today. And, don't embarrass us. It's Aunt Anne's funeral and I don't want to get embarrassed today. And so I wouldn't drink. I have these intense emotions. I have these where I just get, so I'm not drinking, and I'm not drinking. When I don't drink, I get really, really tense. And so somebody would just inevitably would walk up to me and just say, hey, Rick, how's it going? And they just mean, hey, how you doing? Like, I haven't seen you in a long time or whatever, but I think you can see inside me. And I just go off on the person and whatever, right? And I just, I can't function without drinking, you know? And that happened kind of slowly. You know, at first drinking was just, it wasn't really my thing. It just made me feel better. I knew that. I could articulate that I felt better when I was drinking than when I was not drinking. Looking back in retrospect, I didn't realize that alcohol was doing something different for me than it was doing for everybody else. I'd go to these AA meetings at the request of a doctor. He said I was drinking too much. So my grandmother found an AA meeting and took me to that. And I'm sitting in this meeting and the people are all old. People are at least 30 years old and just hideous. And I just couldn't identify with anything that they were saying and doing. And they would talk about God. And I had since left the Catholic Church and had failed out of Catholic school and was going into a regular public school now. And I still, once again, I'm the new kid. I don't know anybody. And I'm feeling different. I'm feeling ill at ease again, one more time, but at least I've gotten away from, because the things I heard in the Catholic Church was that I was going to go to hell for the things I was thinking. And I stopped thinking about those things and started doing those things. So I knew for sure that I was going to hell. And I know today that's not what the Catholic Church says. And I know that that wasn't what they said, but that's what this kid heard, right? And so my whole world is my reality. My perception is my reality. And that's just the way it is, right? And I'm just going along through life. And I think I'm just hurting myself. I'm not really hurting anybody else. I'm just hurting myself. And I go through a series of jobs and girlfriends and I'm starting to go through family members now. My last and only enablers are my family, and they're starting to get tired of all the BS. You know, I'd go to AA and I'd straighten up my life, you know, and that's what I thought. That's what I heard that in AA meetings, that you don't drink one day at a time and that you start getting your life back together. And so I would try to do that. I would not drink, and I would not drink for a long time. Sometimes with a little bit of help, I had a little bit of maybe Vicodin or something like that, but I wouldn't be drinking, you know? And I just, nothing ever works like a couple of drinks. You know, I would take that Vicodin and it would relax me for a little bit and that'd be okay. But inevitably, what happens to me is my emotions are still all balled up inside of me. I get depressed. My depression is so great that I just can't stand the way I'm feeling. And when I can't stand the way I'm feeling, I get irritable and I get restless and I get discontented. And saying those words, I'm realizing at the time too, I didn't identify with anything that was said in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's one of the main things we talk about. And I would go to these AA meetings and I was looking for all the differences and I found it. And I would drink again. Inevitably, I would always drink again. Every time, I mean, it got to the end where I was fighting to drink, it got from fighting to drink weekly to daily. I would get up in the morning and today's the day I'm not going to drink. Today I'm not going to drink. And by noon I'd be white knuckling it. And by 1 o'clock, you know, I just got to have one drink just to go, everything's all right, right here. And, you know, from that point, it was almost like pointless to even try anymore, you know, because my emotions were so, that was the thing about, you know, that's why I never really did a lot of drugs or anything else, is because alcohol put me right in the center of life. And that's where I love to be. I love the effects that I got from alcohol, because that would, and nothing else ever worked. Nothing. And I tried many other things and just nothing else got me right where I wanted to be. And alcohol worked every time. And so I'm going in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going in and out of relationships. I'm going in and out of jobs. I'm moving to different parts of the city. I never really moved out of my city by moving, you know, I'm just, and pretty soon now I can't hold a job at all. I'm living in my car and now it's getting to the point now where they're going to tow my car. And I just don't even know what else to do anymore. And I'm to that point and I'm too chicken to kill myself, really, but I want this all to end. I want the madness to go away. I want to stop. I can't live with drinking and I can't live without drinking. I'm in that spot that I just can't spring for myself from. And I'm just coming out of my skin. And now they're going to tow the car. And so I have to get out of the car. And so I get out of the car and there's an AA club parked. I was parked right like across the street from this AA club in North Sacramento. And I walked into that meeting, and there was an old timer in there that I'd seen around before, and he just tried to help me before. And I, you know, I'm the type of guy I'm like the guy who I join the gym, right? And I go and I join the gym. When you join the gym, they give you like 10 free passes for personal training, right? But I'm the guy, I go to the gym and I bring some donuts into the gym, you know, and I'm just kind of hanging out. Maybe I'm passing out towels, or maybe I'm just hanging out at the gym. And, you know, pretty soon one of those personal trainers comes and says, "Hey, you know, with your membership that you paid for already, you have some personal training. I have some time right now. I mean, I'm happy to help you out," or whatever. I'm like, "Oh, no, because see, I can see everything that's going on in the gym, and I'm pretty smart, and I can actually figure things out. Like, I see the girl running on the treadmill over there. I see the guy lifting weights over here, and I get how it all works, right? And I understand it really, really well. Like, I could probably articulate it to you in a way that you've never heard it articulated before. I'm so smart that I can actually do that. And so I could tell you how this gym works and how the muscle systems and when you lift the weight this way, and if you have your form right, you could, you know, all this stuff. I know about all this stuff. I know way, way more than you do anyway. So there's no way that you could help me." And so I just sit in the gym, and while you guys are coming in and out of the gym, and you guys are all getting better, you guys are all getting in shape, and I'm just getting worse. My cardio's lagging. I can't even walk. I can't walk to the kitchen sink, and I'm out of breath. I don't know what's going on. This gym doesn't work. It's the gym that doesn't work, you know. And one more time, you know, somebody will say, "Hey, you know, maybe just try doing some of the stuff that you know so much about. Why don't you try to do it?" You know, and that's what this guy kind of said. He said, "You know, you say AA doesn't work, but actually you've never tried AA. So why don't you try this, smart guy? Why don't you try AA, do it, and then it won't work like you say. And then you could say, 'I did AA and it doesn't work.' But you can't really say that right now because you've never done it, smart guy." And it's for some reason, like, he just got in my face with that. It just, for some reason, something shifted in me. And I said, "Okay, well, what do I have to do?" And he said, "Well, where are you living right now?" And the tow truck's loading my car up, so I'm not living anywhere right now, right? And so I stayed on this guy's couch, and he let me sleep on his couch. And when he went to work in the morning, I had to get up and leave the house, and I could come back when he came back from work. And in the meantime, I was looking for a job myself. And, you know, I finally found a job, and a little crappy job making boxes or something. And something that I could do, though. And I started doing that thing. But every night we'd read out of the big book. His wife would cook us dinner, and we'd eat and we'd read out of the big book. And I didn't want anything to do with this God stuff. I didn't want anything to do with anything. And he said, "You know, kid, it's really not that hard of a thing. The hoop is not that big that you have to jump through." He said, and he started making this analogy of power, like a power that's, and we use the analogy of electricity. And he shut the lights off in the house. And he said, "Now it's dark right now." He said, "You know, that the power doesn't really care if you get up and turn on the lights, or if my wife walks back in the room and turns on the lights, or if I turn the lights back on. The power will just work if I turn the light switch back on. And that same power will cook your dinner. The same power powers the electric chair in San Quentin State Prison. So the same power just works. It just does what it does. All you have to do is you have to be able to access that power. You have to have your machine plugged into the wall to access the power. Right now you have your machine plugged into the electrical, to the extension cord. But guess what, kid? Your extension cord ain't plugged into nothing." And for some reason that made sense to me. And we went to this meeting, and it was a big meeting. And he said, "I want you to find the drunk people here." And I couldn't find anybody that was drunk. And he said, "Those people all used to be just like you. So you admitted to me that alcohol was a power greater than you in your life. And now I'm going to challenge you that this here in Alcoholics Anonymous is a power greater than alcohol, that there's nobody here drinking and they're not ruining their lives like they used to do." And I would listen to your guys' story, and I would identify with some things. And, And I started to listen. I started to listen for those similarities and how drinking made you feel and how sobriety made you feel. And I could identify with that. And I knew you'd been, I knew he'd been where I'd been because he told me his story. And that thing of one alcoholic helping another alcoholic. And so I came to believe in a power that alcohol, that Alcoholics Anonymous was a power greater than alcohol. And then if it was an power greater than alcohol, it was a power greater than me. And that was good enough. And from that little tiny bit, I was able to start my journey here. And I was able to do a semi-honest inventory. And then what started to happen is that I ended up getting off his couch. I ended up living in this trailer that this, in this person's property, and got this little job now, and things are looking a little better. The family's letting me back in and this kind of thing. I still haven't really made amends to them. I told them I was sorry, but I haven't really made amends to them for the damage that I've caused or anything like that. Life isn't perfect, but I'm probably around 60, 70 days sober or something like that. And I had a chair this meeting on the other end of town. I got to go pick up this new guy. And I'm thinking, how much longer you got to do this AA crap anyway? You know, it's just getting to be a little bit too much. And so I go and I pick this guy up. And I got to tell you, this guy stunk really bad. He's shaking. He's coming out of his skin. He's going through DTs. I'm feeding him Carol syrup and orange juice and a little bit of vodka in this big old glass. And he just so he won't die. So he won't die on me. And he's like, he's hideous. He's puking in my car and all this stuff. And I go to this meeting. I'm talking at the meeting. I shared that story with that I just told you guys that, you know, every day I'm fighting to drink, and it got down to the point where it's every hour I'm fighting to drink and the drinks went in. I just can't do this anymore. So I get this guy, we're riding back home, and I'm really thoroughly disgusted with this guy because I've worked with him for, I don't know, 2 weeks now, and he still can't stay sober. He can't do anything. And it's like, how much longer you got to do this crap? And he asked me this question. He said, Rick, how long till you didn't want to drink every day? And I almost crashed the car because I couldn't answer the question. I didn't know how long it had been. And so I went home that day. I got him back home. I told his wife, you know, feed him a little bit more of this Carol syrup and orange juice concoction that I made. But if he goes into DTs, you better get him to a hospital, because that's one thing you can die from is his DTs. And he was bad off. And I went home and I told my sponsor, hey, this program works. And he goes, yeah, no shit, huh? And I told him that story. I said, I haven't wanted to drink. And he said, really? No kidding. And he got the book and he threw the book at me. And all this time he's been reading to me and he's been sharing his experience as we're going through the book. All this time he's been reading this stuff to me. And this time he threw the book at me and he made me read this part on the promises of step 10. It says, we've ceased. I'm not going to read the whole thing, I promise, but it says, we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. And it says, this has happened automatically. It comes without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We've not even sworn off. The problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. And I could honestly say that that was true in my life, that it did not exist for me. And that was the first time that I could remember since I was a kid that I hadn't wanted or needed a drink, that something was controlling these obsessive emotions, that I wasn't in a depression anymore, which was weird. I wasn't crying myself to sleep anymore. I wasn't feeling so depressed that I just wanted it to end anymore. I didn't have these intense anger where I wanted to just choke you out anymore. That those things had dissipated. They were still there. They were still like on this, like underneath the surface. I could tell that they were there, but they weren't as apparent anymore. They were like arrested for that period of time. And so I knew that AA worked. And every time we went through one of the steps, he he would always read the promises of the step. And I just thought, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's, you know, all these self-help books have all these wonderful flowery things that happen to you, whatever. You know, if you do this, this will happen to you or whatever. You know, this Tony Robbins type of stuff. But this really worked. This wasn't, I thought this was just like some flimsy read of something that just wasn't. This was tangible. It didn't seem tangible at the time that I was going through it, but I had to look back in retrospect. And at that time, 60 days, now 26 years, I'm looking back in retrospect. And I could definitely see that there was something working in my life, and it wasn't me. I don't have the wherewithal or the knowledge. I'm barely a high school graduate. I barely have any, you know, I have no college, no nothing. I don't have the wherewithal to pick myself up by my bootstraps and straighten my life up. There is no way. There's no way that I got from living in my car to where I am today, standing before you, a sober human being for 26 years. There's absolutely no way I did that. There's no possible way. It's impossible. And that's what I used to think of AA. This is impossible. This is just a bunch of crap, except that it works. But the problem is you got to do it long enough to see it working. And look, then you can look back and see it work. I mean, yeah, the first day in the gym, the first day you go work out in the gym, you're going to be sore, but you're not going to see any results at all. I promise you, you won't. And that's the same with AA. Your first day, you're just going to meetings. You're brand new. You're just going to meetings and stuff. You're not going to see any results. No, you're not. You know, it doesn't like it's going to, a light switch is going to go off and all of a sudden you're sober and happy and you have a job and $1 million in the bank. It just doesn't work like that, right? And so I started doing the stuff and I ended up going back and making amends with my parents. And by this time I had gotten a different sponsor. This guy had kind of floated out the top of AA, wasn't really doing AA anymore. He later ended up taking his own life because he stopped doing the stuff that was in the book. The man that saved my life took his own life because he wasn't, he had some other issues obviously too that had happened. He got an accident. It's a long story, but, the things that happened in his life, he was no longer, now he's no longer with us. And I got this different sponsor and he made me get, he made me go back and make amends to my parents. And I thought I had done it, but he made me make an appointment with them. And so I had to pick a time. They let them pick the time. It was like 2 weeks in advance. And I had to let them know why I was coming. And what I asked them was how my behavior had affected them. See, and they were like really outgoing people. They were very social, all this stuff. They had this big life. And then all of a sudden they became these old fuddy-duddies. And I just thought they were just old fuddy-duddies. You know, I had no idea that. But what they told me in that interview, in that amends, was that they stopped going out and doing things because their friends would inevitably, the conversation would turn to, how's Rick doing? Well, Rick's living in his car. I mean, you know, it just wasn't questions that they were prepared to answer anymore. They just got tired of, you know, because I'd be doing good for a while and then it was bad again. And so I sat there and I listened to what it was like to have me as a son. What it was like to stay up all night long when your only son is, you know, calling at 2 a.m. when it's, you know, what it's like when you happen to work for a state law enforcement agency and you can see things on the computer about stuff your son's doing. And, you know, and it breaks your heart. You know what I mean? I was only hurting myself. Just leave me alone. Let me live my life. Just leave me alone. I'm just hurting myself. But, what it's like to watch your wife go through all this anxiety and emotions where she has to be put on medication in order to sleep at night. And that wasn't because, you know, and that wasn't because of anything they were doing. That was because of me. And what I started to learn is I had a direct impact on a lot of people's lives. And so I went back and I made those amends, and that's how I made them. I asked people how my behavior affected them, if they were willing to tell me. And, I got to tell you, if you ever want to drink after you do an amends like that, a bunch of amends like that, it's very emotional. There's a lot of crying involved. And I don't like to cry because I'm a tough guy. And, you know, but I did it. And I got to tell you, I never want to live that way again. If you make amends that way and you ever want to live that way again, you're a psychopath. There's no way I ever want to go back to that way of life ever. And I mean, I know we don't say around here, I'll never drink again. I mean, I know that that's always an option, but I never want to live the way I was living, and I'll do whatever it takes. I'll pick up newcomers. I'll come and talk at this meeting in Bend, Oregon. I'll go to Las Vegas. I'll go wherever you want me to go so I don't have to live that way. I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to say yes to every AA request. And that was one of the spiritual principles. You know, we talk about these spiritual principles that, you know, of prayer and meditation and all this kind of stuff. And I got to tell you that the 11th step that I practice this today, this morning with a new guy that's going through this stuff with me. And you know, for me, I look at this 11th step. When I retire at night, I constructively review my day. That's what I do. And I do exactly what it says on there. Because I went to a bunch of meditation meetings when I was new because I thought I had to meditate. I had to learn how to meditate, right? And so I got to learn how to do yoga or whatever the kids are doing and all that kind of stuff. And I don't think we had yoga then. That came out later. But if we would have, I would have tried that too. And here's the thing too, is there's nothing wrong with all that stuff if you're doing the AA stuff too. What my sponsor pointed out to me is it says on the top of 86, it says, we could be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And then it goes on to make some definite valuable suggestions. And my problem is that I have so much trouble just doing what it suggests every day and just keep connected to this. I mean, it's like in the end of this thing, this chapter, it says we're undisciplined. We let God discipline us in this simple way. And that's so true for me. Like I don't do this every single day exactly how it's outlined in the book. And I've been practicing it for 26 years. And I still, you know, many people do this stuff one or two times and they just float out the top and they're just wonderful. I'm weak and heavy laden most days. I mean, I still have issues. I still have problems and all that kind of stuff. I've never gotten to where I don't need to do this stuff in this book and don't. And so like, that's what I was doing this morning. With a brand new guy. And we were doing this part on awakening. It says we think about the 24 hours ahead. So we looked at our calendars. Both of us did. What do we have planned for today? I had to talk with this meeting at noon. I had to do some stuff after this. And what do I have planned for the day? I have my day planned out. I look at my calendar, my task list. What was on my task list yesterday that didn't get done that's maybe more of a priority today? This way I'm not just running around like a chicken with my head cut off, like, oh, I have to go here. Oh, I forgot to call Carrie back. That's right. Now I got to stop over here. I mean, sometimes there's days that I wouldn't get out of the house, right? Because I go in the kitchen to get some coffee, but then I'd remember I have to go back to the bedroom because I forgot something over there. And then, oh, I have to go to the bathroom to get that. Oh, I have to go to the laundry room to get that. I'm all over the place. And I don't even leave the house. I'm just going around in a circle because I'm crazy, right? Because I need to stop and do this, what it says here. Consider our plans today. What are my plans today? What do I got to do? I got to call Carrie back. I got to call Joe back. I got to call this client. I got to do this. I got to take care of these things, right? I have to live my life by my calendar. So we ask God to direct our thinking. I use the old Chuck C prayer. I love this just because it makes it simple for me. It's just a simple prayer. It's God, it's me. I'm reporting for duty. I'm going to do the best I can today with what I got. And all I ask, got to use a little guidance, direction, and the power to carry it out. And I sure thank you. And that's, I start my day with that prayer. It's that just that simple. It says, God gave us brains to use, right? And thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration or intuitive thought. I mean, it tells me how to start my day. It tells me how to end my day here. And that's the meditation. You know, there's an old, if you look at an older dictionary, one that was around, the dictionary we had, I don't have this dictionary anymore, but the dictionary we had was from like, I think it was like 1916 or 1917, somewhere around the time that Bill would have been forming his language skills. And in that dictionary, it described meditation as planning, like a general will meditate a war. That was one of the examples that it used. And that's what it is. It's planning. Meditation took on a new form in the 1960s. And it means something totally different today. We have to realize that that's not what Bill was talking about. That's the whole three decades earlier, right? And there's what, you know, the other thing is too, is there's nothing wrong with yoga. I've done yoga before. There's nothing wrong with doing all that stuff and all the other meditations and stuff, I'm sure are fine. There's nothing. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying for me, I have to get this stuff down first. I got to do what AA suggests first. And then I could do any outside stuff. I mean, I go to the gym every day. I work out. I do take care of myself. I take care of my, you know, my livingness and all that kind of stuff too, as well. You know, you have to. So anyway, I started doing this stuff and I was having trouble with, you know, a lot of different things. And I was introduced to traditions. I was introduced to how to apply traditions to my life as well. And what happened to me from there is I started to grow up around here. I started to take some responsibilities. I got a better job. I got this job where I started off just as like a part-time merchandiser. And a training position opened up. They said, you're doing a really good job as a merchandiser. Would you like to be a trainer? And from there, a supervisor position opened up. So I became a supervisor. Then I became a district manager. Then I became a regional manager. I started climbing this corporate ladder. One day they're going to take on some new business. They looked at my area because the industry standard, we were in every city and state in the United States and all the provinces of Canada and three European countries. And industry wide standard was 93 to 96%. They like to be on the 96% compliance rate with all of their programs. Like everything is, nothing's going to be perfect. They know that, but 93 to 96%. Compliance rate. And that was kind of the rate was throughout the country was between 93 and 94%. And, my area was Northern California, from Redding to Stockton. And it was 100% every month. I'm not blowing my own horn. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the traditions. And that's the, and they didn't know that. They had no idea that that's what we'd have a group conscience in the morning. I was not their manager. I was their leader. And I would ask them how I could help them. What's the problems in your area that I can help you with today? And that's what we went with. And we had a group conscience. We didn't decide anything. I wasn't God. I helped them come to some decisions in their own area to their own benefit. Each area is different. I understood that and that kind of thing. And they had different unique things in each area. And I don't know how to do any of this stuff. I have no college education. I have nothing. I have Alcoholics Anonymous steps. Traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all I got. I barely graduated high school. I graduated high school really because the high school counselor gave me, I still needed like 10 credits, I think, or something like that. He just said, here you go. Just take it. See you later, kid. Good luck. Like, you know. And so anyway, I'm doing this and I get some notice of this, right? Obviously. And so they pull me back to Atlanta, Georgia, because they want to talk about this new business and they want my opinion. They want my input because my area is perfect, which is unheard of in the whole industry. There might've been a couple other areas that were close, but I was number one. Usually, I mean, we slipped down to 99% sometimes, but it was pretty good. And so I'm sitting in this boardroom with these executives. These people are making, I don't even know how much money, stupid amount of money. And I flash, and this was by this time I'm 10 years sober. And I flash back to that kid in the car, the homeless kid, that these guys would have like walked around the block to avoid. And now I'm in your corporate board room and you're going to be asking me for my opinion. And I froze for a minute. I was like, and the other thing is I didn't really know what to tell them. Because I can't tell them, well, you got to first screw up your life and start to work steps and traditions in your life and build your life back up. I mean, that doesn't make any, you know, nobody wants to hear that, right? And nobody wants to hear, you know, you're running your area from the steps and traditions of AA. I mean, you know, that just doesn't fly in the corporate world. And, but I laid out a plan. I laid out what my opinion was and what I thought, foresee were the problems and that kind of thing. And they implemented that stuff in my area first because they wanted me to do it. And a lot of the stuff was successful. A lot of it didn't fly just because they weren't willing to change their corporate culture, which had to be changed, which is a long story. I'm not going to go into all that, but I ended up getting out of that career and I'm in a different career now. But, you know, I started to make friends with women. I didn't have women that were friends. I had women that I used. I had women that were like a drink with legs. If the brunette stopped working, I picked up the blonde type thing. My sponsor forbade me to date. I had to have friends. We went to the movies. We went to coffee. We didn't kiss. We just like said, I want you to treat it like it was a guy. And I started making friends with women. I have a lot of Carrie is one of my good friends. I have a lot of friends that are female today from that. And it's great. I'm glad my sponsor gave me that direction. From that, I did meet a girl. We did get married. Eventually we had two kids. My son just recently graduated from high school. He'll be 18 this year. He just graduated. My daughter is 22 and she's moved out. She lives down south now. But she's a manager for a company. Both kids are great kids. Neither one of them drink or use as far as I know. And they're both good kids. They both did good in school and all that stuff. Me and that woman, we grew apart. We're more like brother and sister. And so we split up, but it was an amicable, I got to tell you, I told this to somebody the other day that if I had to do it all over again and I know what the outcome is, I would choose her to be mother of my children. There's no animosity with us. We're still good friends today. I talked to her the other day. I talked to her at the graduation. You know, the whole thing, we co-parented all these years and we raised them right, you know, and we're good friends today. And that's just the way it goes. I love that AA taught me how to be a man, you know, instead of a little boy. And so I did that thing. And then now, like I said, I have a different career today that, you know, where don't have as much freedoms and stuff as I did when I was in management, but a lot less responsibility too. So in some ways it's a lot better. I sponsor guys. I've never been without a sponsor. My sponsor is Bob D from Las Vegas, Nevada. I see him a couple times a year, two or three times a year. I'm a member of good standing in my home group. I believe in a home group. I believe in having one place where I has my AA address. I believe that that's important. That's where most of my seventh tradition money goes, is to my home group. I believe in that fervently. I live by the traditions of AA. I am an alcoholic. I think that's one of the things that people get really confused about, because a lot of people come here and they've done a lot of different stuff, and that's fine if you've done a lot of different stuff. Find out if you're an alcoholic by going through the doctor's opinion and seeing if all that stuff is true for you. Alcohol has to do something special for you in order for you to be an alcoholic. Anybody that takes drugs will become a drug addict. Anybody. You don't get a pass from heroin. If you shoot heroin into your veins intravenously, you'll become a heroin addict. You may also do alcohol. That doesn't make you an alcoholic. You see what I'm saying? So it's the substance that gets you with the drugs. The substance of alcohol is not addictive. My parents drink alcohol. My parents drink. And if I ask my dad, when was the last time he had a glass of wine? It'd be much like me asking some of you, when was the last time you had a taco? He probably wouldn't know. And he likes wine. He enjoys it. And he probably wouldn't know. But it's a beverage to him. It's like soda or something. I mean, I think it's more than like soda, but because he does enjoy it. But he'll drink a glass and that'll be it. My mom has a drink. I don't think she even drinks anymore, but she used to have one drink on New Year's Eve and she'd have one and that'd be it. Like, what's the point of that, right? And I don't even think she has that anymore. She's older and she has more of some health problems now. And I don't even think she drinks that one drink a year. The substance of alcohol is not addictive at all. And so It's you have to have the alcoholism to be an alcoholic. The other thing that I was confused about is the whole God thing. AA is not, when I used to hear God, I used to think immediately I would equate God with the church and with religion. And in a sense, the church and religion is, in a sense, that is spiritual, but that's not the spiritual that AA is dealing with. The spirituality of Alcoholics Anonymous is simply one alcoholic helping another alcoholic. That's it. This meeting is a spiritual meeting. Any meeting of two or three alcoholics together for sobriety is a spiritual meeting. And that's what I had mixed up, because every time I heard God, I thought of the church, and it's not the same. You can certainly become religious here, and there's nothing wrong with any religion. Believe me, I'm not bashing any religion. If you do belong to a religious organization, I think that's awesome. They help millions of people are helped by going to religion, and millions of AA people also go to religion, but it's an outside issue. You could also become a plumber here. You see what I'm saying? It's you could become a plumber or you could become a Catholic. Either way you want to go, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have anything to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. Religion has nothing to do with AA at all. And that's what I had to learn that. I had to just get that into my head that we are a spiritual organization, and we deal with spirituality on a level that helps me live comfortably in the world where I don't have to drink to stand it. That's really what AA does. AA alters my perception of reality, much like alcohol altered my perception of reality. And today my perception, now it doesn't happen as fast. It's like the gym analogy. The first time I go to the gym, I'm not going to get swole. I'm not going to see any results at all the first day or the second day, or maybe even a month later, I might see a little bit. But AA is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, but yet it's the most worth it. I love this program today. I love my life that I have today. It's not perfect, like I said. You know, I have a lot of many faults. I have, you know, I'm not perfect. The program is perfect. I'm not. That's for sure. But it's given me a life that I wouldn't trade for $1 million. If you told me that I could go back for just one day to my old life, I would just tell you to keep it. I wouldn't want even to go back for one day of that. I used alcohol because it affected my perceptions, but my perception of reality has been altered by Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's been altered sufficiently by Alcoholics Anonymous to where I don't want or need a drink anymore. And I can live comfortably and happily in this world most days. So I think that's about all I have. I want to thank Carrie for inviting me on here. I don't think I've ever done a long talk on here. I know I've talked for Carrie for, you know, 15, 20 minutes, whatever that other one that you guys used to do or however. Or I've talked on a subject on here, I think, before or whatever, but I don't think I've done really a whole talk on here. And it's been a while since I've done a whole talk anyway, so that's why I'm kind of rambling a little bit. But I hope I made some sense to some people. Again, thank you, AA, for my life, and thanks, New Horizons Group, for allowing me to be here today. Thanks.